An explosion a couple weeks ago at a missile testing site in Russia killed at least 7 people. And American intelligence officials reportedly think the source may have been a new kind of nuclear weapon. The Russian government's explanation about what happened has changed a few times since the explosion. But it comes as the U.S. is testing a missile that was off limits under a recently abandoned treaty. Andrew Kidd is a professor of political science at UW-Madison and an expert on international relations and nuclear weapons. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What do we know so far about this explosion and what might have caused it?
Well, the current guess, essentially, we don't know for sure because the Russians are being very secretive about it. But the current speculation, informed speculation, is that it was a nuclear-powered missile, or at least the motor, the engine for a prototype nuclear-powered missile. And that may seem a bit strange because the United States has not been pursuing nuclear-powered missiles. We had a nuclear-powered missile program in the late 50s, early 60s, and went so far as to test it once or twice, but it never really got very far. For reasons that are pretty clear, given this recent explosion, we have nuclear-powered submarines, we have nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, we have nuclear power plants on land, one here in Wisconsin. But nuclear power plants are big and heavy and need a lot of shielding and protection and concrete and special rooms and lots of operators. And so to try to cram all that into something that would fly on a missile is extremely difficult and dangerous. And so we decided not to pursue that technology, but apparently the Russians have been pursuing it.
And so to make this distinction, when we think of a nuclear missile, we usually think of a conventionally driven missile with a nuclear warhead, the part that blows up. This is something that actually the motor, the thing that makes it move, would be nuclear powered.
Exactly. That's the distinction. Although in this case, the warhead itself might also be nuclear, but the key thing that makes this different and strange is the concept that it would be a nuclear-powered missile. Our missiles are powered by conventional rocket fuels, essentially, and everybody else's are too. The reason why you might want to do it is because you would get extremely long range. Nuclear aircraft carriers can sail around the world for years at a time before they have to refuel. And so a nuclear-powered cruise missile could conceivably fly also around the world for days or even weeks at a time before landing on its target. And so that might give you some advantages if you want to have a missile that's sort of loitering off the enemy's coast and then strikes when you give it the command, something along those lines. But those advantages haven't been considered to be that great, given that we can already, with conventional ICBMs, conventionally powered ICBMs, hit anywhere in the world because they're just long enough range. And so you can fire it from the United States and 30 minutes later it will hit whatever target in Russia or China or wherever it would be. So we already have the ability to hit anywhere in the world. This would give you the ability to hit anywhere in the world with a cruise missile, which we have not had the capacity to do so far.
So that's on the Russian side of things. We also see in the news the U.S. Testing a range of missile, land-based missile, that would have been barred. We couldn't have tested it under a nuclear weapons treaty, a missile treaty that we just left in response to, I think the White House said, in response to Russia's actions.
Right. So we just tested a land-based cruise missile with a range somewhat over 500 kilometers. And those missiles were banned under a treaty known as the INF Treaty, or the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which was negotiated and signed way back in 1987, when the United States and the Soviet Union were still engaged in the Cold War. And that was really a landmark treaty because it got rid of a whole class of nuclear missiles between 500 and 550, 5,500, sorry, kilometer range, both on the Russian side, the Soviet side, and on the American side, of the ground-launched variety. And all those missiles were destroyed, and the factories that made them were inspected so that we were sure that nobody was cheating on the treaty. It was the first time the Soviets allowed on-site inspections. So that was really a landmark treaty for the Cold War and helped really build the kind of trust that helped end the Cold War at that time. But since then, the United States has accused the Russians of violating that treaty by deploying and testing their own ground-launched cruise missiles. And this recent test that we just conducted is our own. We have withdrawn from the treaty now, and so we are now testing such a missile as well. It's actually just a version of a missile we already had, the Tomahawk cruise missile that we launched from ships. But what's different about it and what would have been prohibited is the fact that it's being launched from ground, from land, rather than from a ship.
Why was this particular category of missile seen as so potentially destabilizing and risky?
Sure. The whole controversy or the whole crisis emerged when the Soviets started modernizing their intermediate range missiles. And the thing that was scary about those missiles is that they were based in the western portion of the Soviet Union and even in Eastern Europe. And they were very fast, the new versions that they were deploying in the late 70s and early 80s. They were very fast, and they could strike targets in Western Europe in 5-8 minutes with nuclear warheads, multiple nuclear warheads. And so they would essentially afford no warning time at all. So basically the Soviets, if they wanted to start a war in a surprise attack, could be attacking German air bases or NATO air bases in West Germany or the Netherlands or even the UK, 5 to 10 minutes after deciding to do so. So that was deemed extremely scary and meant that we had to be on ever higher levels of alert so that we might be able to respond in time. But the more you are on higher levels of alert, the more chance there is for accidental war if there's some sort of glitch in the warning system. So that was viewed as extremely dangerous. And we wanted to negotiate those missiles out. The Soviets didn't want to give them up, so we deployed our own versions of those sorts of missiles. And then finally, both sides agreed to get rid of them altogether.
Talking to Andrew Kidd, expert on international relations and nuclear weapons at UW-Madison, looking at an explosion of what appears to be a nuclear-powered missile in Russia and a U.S. test of a missile that was recently banned from testing or unbanned because the U.S. withdrew from a treaty. Andrew, anybody who grew up in the, 1950s through 1980s, had this sort of, background dread of a nuclear confrontation between the United States and the Soviet Union. Then the 1990s came along, and I think we all got a sense that, okay, we're done with worrying about nuclear arms races anymore. Are we getting back to that point now?
We are getting back to that to some extent, with Russia to some extent, and also with China as well. We are modernizing our own forces. They are modernizing their forces. And I'm not so worried about the nuclear-powered cruise missile because I think that's essentially not ever going to work. But we're pursuing a lot of other technologies that might work and might lead to further rounds of escalation in the arms race. One of them is hypersonic weapons. So there's a new class of warheads, essentially, that are hypersonic. And ordinary ICBM warheads are hypersonic, meaning they go much faster than the speed of sound. Already, but they are not maneuverable. So you fire them, they go off through the atmosphere into outer space, and then they come back in on a predictable trajectory. And that's the whole basis of the American nuclear missile defense, national missile defense efforts to try to shoot down those warheads. But hypersonic warheads are also very much faster than the speed of sound, but they're maneuverable. They're sort of like little airplanes that are going incredibly fast. And so they can deliver warheads on targets at speeds associated with ICBMs, but they could come out of the blue, right? They're very hard to defend against. So the United States is pursuing that technology. China, Russia, all three are pursuing that technology. So that's a new round of the arms race that I think we're going to see becoming increasingly prominent in the next several years.
We had, during the Cold War, this long-running, sometimes on and off, regimen of negotiations and process with the Soviet Union and the United States. Do we have anything like that in place now with U.S., China, and Russia?
We don't really, and that's for a number of reasons. We did have a new effort at strategic arms control in the Obama years with the New START Treaty with Russia. That sort of continued this process of reducing the biggest ICBMs on each side, the United States and the Russian side. But the Republican foreign policy establishment has never been that keen on arms control. And when Trump came in, there's sort of an interesting paradox there because Trump, of course, wants to improve relations with Russia. So you think he would be in favor of arms control. But Trump himself also doesn't like international treaties. And that applies to arms control treaties as well. And he staffed his administration with hardliners, for the most part, and people like John Bolton, who are dead set against international treaties and international arms control treaties in particular. And so it's been very easy for Bolton and sort of anti-arms control folks in the administration to get Trump away from treaties, even though he's by and large, you know, sympathetic to the Russian perspective and wants to improve relations with Russia. So at the current moment, at least, arms control is dead in the water.
There a system evolved during the Cold War of trying to communicate between the two sides and make sure, if at all possible, we did not stumble into a nuclear war unintentionally or through escalation. Do we, or do you know if we have that kind of back channel contact with China and Russia, even if we're not negotiating treaties, that, hey, we're keeping each other apprised and not backing into a nuclear confrontation?
Sure. There are still avenues of communication between the United States and China, the United States and Russia. And so those avenues are there. The question is, will they be used? Will they be trusted if push comes to shove? I don't see a huge issue with Russia right now, although there's a possibility. Largely the United States has withdrawn from Syria, which would have been a flashpoint because of the Russian forces in Syria. So we're sort of arms racing with Russia, but there's no obvious regional source of tension where we're sort of right up against each other. Whereas with China, there's still North and South Korea, where American forces are poised in South Korea, opposing North Korea. That's one flashpoint. And then there's the whole South China Sea area as well, where China is busily building up its presence in the South China Sea. And the United States is contesting that by sending our Navy in to conduct these freedom of navigation operations. And so that's another possible flashpoint between the United States and China.
And finally, just on a related note, getting back to Russia, President Trump has been talking about inviting Russia back into the Economic Group of Nations, currently the G7, making it the G8 again. Russia was ousted, in effect, for their occupation of, I think it was the part where they occupied Crimea. They're still there. What's the conversation on that right now?
Yeah, that's an interesting issue. I think that goes along with Trump's general sort of desire to improve relations with Russia in that regard, bring them back in to the fold and forgive them for various trespasses in the past. Interestingly, France seems to be on board with that. I'm not sure if it will happen. I think there's a lot of opposition to that on the part of the other countries in the G7. So we'll have to see. I think a lot of other countries are much less, are much more skeptical, let's say, of Putin and his intentions and motivations in joining and wanting to join such an organization. So I think that's going to be a bit contentious.
Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That's Andrew Kidd with UW-Madison's Political Science Department. He was with us today to talk about the state of nuclear weapons testing and international treaties, or lack thereof in some cases, after an explosion in Russia suspected to be from a prototype of a new kind of nuclear weapon, and concerns that we might be entering a new arms race.